Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Lynn S. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Today is Wednesday, July the 17th, 2024, and we're continuing our study of the Big Book and the chapter More About Alcoholism. We're on page 32. We're in the second paragraph, a man of 30, but we're starting 14 lines down. Out came his carpet slippers, and we're reading till the end of the paragraph. And today's readers are 12 Steps, Toby K, 12 Traditions, Susan G, and readers of the text, Vanessa G, Heidi B, and Larry K. The share ID for yesterday, Tuesday, July 16th, 2024, the 7 a.m. meeting is 21574, and the 10 a.m. meeting, 21575. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And this morning, Toby K. is going to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Toby.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for calling on me. One, the 12 steps. Thank you. One, we were admitted we were powerless over compulsive overeating, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Three, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except where to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to all compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me do service, I pass.
Thank you, Toby K. And Susan G. is going to read the 12 traditions. Please go ahead, Susan.
Well, thank you, Lynn. Good morning. It's Susan G., a recovered compulsive overeater, the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be brought into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks for letting me give service, and I pass.
Thank you, Susan G. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in the chapter More About Alcoholism on page 32. We're reading paragraph 2, A Man of 30, but go down 14 lines to out came his carpet slippers and a bottle, and we're reading till the end of the paragraph. And Vanessa G., could you get us started, please? Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Lynn. Thank you, everybody who makes this meeting possible. My name is Vanessa G., and I'm recovered in New Mexico, a compulsive overeater. And we're midway down the last paragraph on page 32. Out came his carpet slippers and a bottle. In 2 months, he was in a hospital, puzzled and humiliated. He tried to regulate his drinking for a while, making several trips to the hospital meantime. Then gathering all his forces, he attempted to stop altogether and found he could not. Every means of solving his problem, which money could buy, was at his disposal. Every attempt failed. Though a robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was dead within 4 years. Puzzled and humiliated. I think that probably sums it up for me. I didn't have this particular experience. My periods of food sobriety were much shorter. I was actually 30 when I came to recovery meetings and when I came to OA. Wanting to listen, and for a little while, a couple of years, everything went well. But what happened to me, I think, was that I fell victim to this idea that other people's abstinence could be my abstinence. And I would look around the rooms, and I would see people pretty much eating just about anything, moderate meals, and nothing in between. And so that is what worked for me for a little while, and I kept trying to get back to it. And that sometimes I would have longer periods, you know, 3 or 4 years, and some times I wouldn't. And I kept relapsing. And the last time when I really thought I had it was prior to the pandemic. I had gotten really huge again, and had found a way of eating that I thought was the answer, and lost 165 pounds, and thought, you know, I've got it licked now. And then the lockdown happened, and out came my carpet slippers, and out came, for me, it wasn't a bottle, it was a grilled cheese sandwich, this idea that I could once again eat like other people, that I could eat anything. And that abstinence meant moderate meals. It didn't mean total abstinence, entire abstinence as defined in the doctor's opinion. Within 2 years, I was dying. And without divine intervention, a friend calling from across the country and finding out that I was in trouble and asking me to call into this meeting, I think I would be dead by now. You know, having someone actually explain to me what entire abstinence meant, as defined in the doctor's opinion, and then taking me through this book with an eye on food, with an eye on my alcoholic foods, has given me what I hope and pray is permanent recovery, as long as I continue to do the things that are asked of me in this program, in this book. Thank God I found a solution. Puzzled and humiliated, hopefully no more. I am living today, and I don't think I would be otherwise. I forget that, you know, sometimes how deadly this disease is, and being alive is truly a miracle. And thank you for sharing your miracles with me that helped me to get to the miracle for me. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you for getting us started, Vanessa G. The line is now open for sharing on what we just read. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared yesterday or the day before, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once. It does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share this morning?
Katie Bonnie B. from Florida.
Rachel K.
from Texas.
Ken W.
Okay,
Jennifer
thank you. Let me tell you who I heard, and we'll move on from there because I missed everybody. But I did hear Katie G, Bonnie B, Jennifer C, and Tina S. Who did I miss, please?
Julieta R.
Ken W.
Okay, great. I've got the lineup, please. Thank you. I've got Katie G, Bonnie B, Jennifer C, Tina S, Hannah Yetta, Ken W. H., and Larry K. So, Katie G., please start us off. Good morning.
Hey, Lynn. Thanks for taking the meeting. Good morning, everyone. This is Katie G. I'm recovered in Boston. And, yeah, I mean, I think that for me, I got really confused in recovery. I came in because I really wanted to be thin. I'm an anorexic and bulimic in addition to a compulsive eater. And so I thought, like, coming in and just being abstinent and getting to the right weight, I would be okay. And I'll never forget my first relapse the night before. I was like, whatever, because I was treating this like a diet. And I didn't realize, and someone's amazed, I didn't realize that this isn't No Flour, No Sugar Anonymous. This is Overeaters Anonymous. And so what that means is if I overeat on anything, for me, I will pick up, right? And I have had periods of time of just, you know, being thin, but being thin is not the solution. And, you know, I grew up in Wellesley, Massachusetts, which if you don't know, is a very affluent town, and there is nothing more humiliating than compulsively overeating upstairs every single night with my father in the house. My father is a retired physician, and he had me see the top psychiatrists, the top eating disorder physicians. And I'll even tell you, I have gone back during times of relapse. I have gone back and tried substances that I thought, I've had abstinence for a while, so I might as well go back to gum. I might as well go back to diet soda. I might as well go back to exercise. And every time I go back in a state of stone cold abstinence, the phenomenon of craving comes on and I am puzzled and humiliated. And what this reminds me of is that no human power, right? ABCs. A, I'm a food addict and I have alcoholism, ISM. I don't have alcoholism. Every period of time, I am getting worse, never better. And B, that no human power, no surgery, no gum, no money. I mean, I grew up thinking, I remember I would pray that my parents would send me to a fat camp or that I had a knife and I could just cut my body away because I hated myself so much that I thought an external thing would make me feel okay. And I'll tell you what I know today is that when I'm focused on the internal gets lost and I am lost. And if I'm not careful, eating will be a step up. But thanks be to God, the grace of God has entered into my mind and heart, and I'll wrap up with this, Lynn, entered into my mind and heart in a way that's indeed miraculous. So even though when I'm a human being and I get pulled away, thanks be to God for step 10 and step 11, I get pulled back, and then I get the most precious gift. I get God, and I get to help all of you. I'm so grateful to be one of you today. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Katie G. And next we have Bonnie B, followed by Jennifer C. Welcome, Bonnie.
Hey, good morning, Lynn. Thanks, everyone, for the shares so far. Bonnie B from Florida. Recovered for today by the grace of God. The sentence that popped out to me was the very first one. Out came his carpet slippers and a bottle. To me, that equals letting my guard down. And I've done this. I don't know. I mean, this is sort of like my learning curve, right? I came in thinking it was a number on the scale. That's really all I wanted, was a number on the scale. And I got the number on the scale, out came the carpet slippers, because I did not realize, as was just shared, it's not about the number on the scale. It's about a connection to a higher power, which I call God. The very last sentence says, he went to pieces and was dead within 4 years. They might be talking about physical death there. I die spiritually. The moment I put that substance back into my mouth, something happens. I die. I die on the inside. And it's not the number on the scale. I am disconnected. I'm disconnected from my God, and I'm disconnected from my fellows, because I go back into isolation. It becomes 1,000% all about me. The craving has started. The phenomenon starts all over again. And I end up in a closet someplace, figuratively speaking, with an aluminum baseball bat. Shame and guilt. Like, what happened? What happened? Well, what happened is I was separated. I have an allergy of the body, and I have, I've got a mental blank spot. My disease tells me on a daily basis, you got what you wanted. You've been wearing the same size clothes for 3.5-4 years. You don't have to call the newcomers. You don't have to do this stuff. You can let up, but I can't let up. And I can't let up not just for myself. I can't let up because I love God and I love people. And God has given me freedom through this program. And it would just be flat out wrong of me to not give it away. And the gift is that in step 12, it says, if I don't give it away, I can't keep it. And it is a highlight of my day. So, yeah, for me, it's letting my guard down. And that all starts and ends in my head. It always has. It always will. And so I think with that, I'll pass. And thanks, everyone. Blessings to you all.
Thank you, Bonnie B. And next we have Jennifer C., followed by Tina S. Good morning, Jennifer. Jennifer, press star 1, please.
Good morning. This is Jennifer C. Can I be heard?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Jennifer C. from Greenville, South Carolina, recovered by God's grace, God's power, God's love, and God's way of life. You know, when I first come into the process and when I first came on to this meeting, it was a slow process of getting a full knowledge of this disease, right? So a couple paragraphs back, I have to get a full knowledge of what's going on with me. I have to understand the physical allergy. I have to understand that I have a mental blank spot that's going to forget how bad my last binge was, right? I have to understand both components. And then as I fully understand both components, then I have to understand the most important thing, which is that my own understanding, my own knowledge doesn't have the power to save me. I have to get it, right? I have to get this full knowledge that no matter how long I go, I'm not cured. No matter how much time goes by, I'll not be cured. I have to understand that. But I also have to know that that's not going to have the power. That's powerless to save me. It's powerless to keep me from the first bite. And what I then learn in this program and in this process is that this disease will humiliate me. It will puzzle me every time. I'll always scratch my head and say, how did I get back here? How did I get back here? How did I get back here? How are my binges worse than ever? And only God can save me from that. That's what I learn here at the same time that I learn the rest of it, that only God's power can keep me from taking that first bite. And I have an active part to play in that power, right? I don't just get to sit back and trust in the power of God, which is what I tried to do before I got recovered. I believed in God. I believed in God's power. I've seen it work in so many other areas of life. Why wasn't I able to keep food down? And then something miraculous happens through this beautiful process where I get the power in such a way that is sufficient to keep me from that first compulsive bite. And so I want to encourage anybody on this line this morning that just keeps going back to the food. You're getting a full knowledge. You can't stop. You can't really stop. It's a critical part of the process, surrender to what the doctors are telling us. But at the very same time, to put all my eggs in one basket, and that is the power of God through this process. So keep doing the work. Keep doing what you're told. Keep trusting and believing in it, God, to save you, because it's always God's will to save us. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Jennifer C. from Greenville, North Carolina. And next we have Tina S., followed by Hannah Yetta. Good morning, Tina.
Good morning, Lynn. Tina S., recovered compulsive eater, anorexic in Florida. Thanks so much for your service. Wow. Some great shares this morning, and I'm so grateful that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. And, you know, I can relate to a lot of people. You know, when I came to Overeaters Anonymous back in 1987, I came for the diet, and I was, you know, lucky enough to go to a treatment center where it was based on the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I just wanted the diet. So that's all I was really there for. And when I left, you know, after years of just, you know, binging and then dieting, binging and starving, you know, I dieted the food plan. So I got to a place that I was like very underweight, couldn't even think, you know, and people were saying, just eat anything, you know, and they didn't understand. And so what I did was I just ate. And, you know, like it talks about here, it says puzzled and humiliated, you know, for sure, and that came with even the loss of weight, and then it says he tried to regulate his drinking, and I tried to regulate my eating because deep down I knew, you know, I knew that I was a compulsive eater and that I couldn't eat certain foods, but other people didn't, and so they were just, you know, they just wanted me to gain some weight so I wouldn't die physically, you know, and I had died spiritually in my anorexia. And so and then began the whole cycle. You know, my abstinent date is 1999. So from 1987, when I first came to Overeaters Anonymous, you know, there's 12 years there. And through those 12 years, it was misery. It was misery, you know, getting to a place of, you know, and by this time, you know, I would get to a normal weight and then think I was very back and forth to be like 90 some pounds. And then I got to a place of, you know, I couldn't even think for myself, you know. And so what I did, you know, says that it was dead within 4 years. You know, I was wishing I was dead. You know, I wasn't, you know. And what happened was I finally, you know, got to surrender to this way of life, you know, because it wasn't about the diet. I mean, for sure, I have to not eat my alcoholic foods, and that takes care of the allergy of the body. But the obsession of the mind is to work in the 12 steps to have a transformation that comes about. And this I do today, one day at a time. But this reminds me of where I never want to go again, never want to go again. So it's been a fabulous meeting and really looking forward to some others share. So thanks. I'll pass.
Thank you, Tina S. from Florida. Now up we have Hannah Yetta, followed by Ken W.H. Good morning, Hannah Yetta.
Good morning, everyone. This is Hannah Yetta R. from Texas. Thank you, Lynn, for your service and for everybody's share so far. what mine was the humiliation part of this, of how he was so humiliated after he got drunk right away. I came into the program in 1981 and was abstinent for 10 years. So I went from 264 pounds to a size 10 and was there for 10 years. And when I came in, it was the 301 program, three meals a day, nothing in between at a time. My three meals went to three banquets and beyond, and no sugar. And then I started picking back up the sugar, and I gained my 100 pounds back in like 6 months. And I was working the steps, and I was doing service, and I was a sponsor, and I called newcomers, and I did all of those things. But I don't know what it was. I didn't get my way. I got embarrassed, and I just started eating again. That's a trigger for me. Not getting my way, so I have to really be careful about that today, and that's all ego. But so then after these 10 years of abstinence, I was so humiliated that I gained that weight back, that it just eventually the humiliation and I guess the puzzlement of how it got there, you know, I grabbed back on. I never left, but I grabbed back on to a sponsor and started surrendering again. And about the death, I also, some other people have said, you know, to me, death is not necessarily 6 feet under. A death for me is being far away from my higher power that I call God. And when I'm far away, when I've turned my back, I'm dead. I'm not living, not really living, because to me, that's the worst, of being spiritually dead. And that's where I was. And so I turned around and looked for the light that we look for, and found it again. And again, got abstinent and lost the weight again, and really had a good spiritual program. But that happened to me a couple of times in my program life. And I just want to say that I know for sure it was a miracle that got me back to being abstinent and close to God, because it's all a miracle for me. And the newcomers, please, if you think all of this is, you know, like, wow, I'll never do that, don't ever quit. Don't quit 5 minutes
time,
before
please.
The miracle. And you never know when the miracle is coming. Thank you so much, Lynn. Have a great day.
Thank you, Hannah Yetta R. from Texas. And next we have our gentleman, Ken W.H., followed by Larry K. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning. Thank you so much. Glad to be here. Ken W.H., recovered compulsive overeater from North Carolina. Glad to be here today. Out came the carpet flippers. This guy was flush, Matt. He's only 55 and he's retired. Now, we're looking back. He's telling a story about a guy from the 30s and beyond. He's retiring real early at 55. So he's money isn't an issue. He's got that all worked out. The problem is that surrender cannot be purchased. You can't go down to Walmart and buy some surrender. It just isn't there on the shelf. You won't find a shelf for it. You won't even find a section in the store for it. You cannot buy surrender. And I know that it says on our dollars, in God we trust. But that needs to be written on my heart, not my dollar bills, not my tens, not my C notes, whatever. It has to be written on my heart if it's going to make any sense at all. I must trust in God, period. The dollar bill isn't going to get me abstinent. Just isn't going to happen. There's no pill to buy that I can afford and have no guarantee that that pill would even work. And the other thing I'm really aware of with this guy, quitting is not the same as surrender. They are not synonymous. Quitting is just walking away from, and on my own power, just turning around and walking away from something. Surrender is another issue. Surrender is being humbled to my knees. And so quitting is not surrender. That's only the start. Quitting is a good start in respect of taking the food away from me. But if the surrender doesn't happen, if I do not get the spiritual reality here and find the power greater than myself, or at least allow myself to access the power that's already there, I'm in trouble. So, as a good friend here on the lines would say, say it with me. You know what it is, surrender. That's the solution, and you can't buy it. You can't buy it. Can't retire into it either. I can assure you that. Thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Ken W.H. And now we have Larry K. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Lynn. Who are you calling a gentleman? I'm Larry K. Sometimes I'm a gentleman. I'm recovered from Chicago. You know, the spiritual malady is not the allergy of the body and the twist of the mind. You know, don't get me wrong. Those are problematic for sure. But the man of 30 was suffering from so much more than that. And the big book tells me that selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the very root of my troubles. You know, that needs to be, as I've heard it said, tattooed on the inside of my eyelids. That is what keeps me blocked off from a relationship with power. And have we addicts cornered the market on a sense of entitlement? Not really. You know, we really haven't. You know, I expect special treatment in a store because I'm a regular customer. I feel deserving of a promotion at work without putting forward the necessary effort. I demand immediate attention from customer service reps, don't you? You know, when I call, how dare they make me wait? I don't want to follow the rules. The speed limit is for you, not for me. You know, I want others to accommodate my schedule, my preferences, without considering their needs. See, but unfortunately for us, entitlement in our addiction can be deadly. And this is the self-centered construct of egoism that we're, you know, egoism writ large, right? There's nothing with a greater capacity to keep me blocked off from the sunlight of the spirit than my self-centered, self-absorbed, entitled persona, you know? And in general, a person with a sense of entitlement has a self-absorbed view of the world. And little regard or empathy for the impact on others. And entitlement is it's a very enduring personality trait, and it's one that I need God's help to change that. And it's characterized by a belief that I deserve preferences and I deserve resources that others do not. and this man of 30 got to that place. It's my turn. You know, sometimes we mistake entitlement for you know, self-confidence, for competency, for a charismatic personality. Sometimes we confuse it with narcissism, but, you know, it's always a self-absorbed sort of thing. And life is certainly full of suffering. I grant you that. But life is also brimming over with overcoming of suffering, you know? And that's what this program does. It brings us into alignment with God and finding joy while in the midst of our difficulties is, you know, for me, life's greatest and most important challenge. But it's worth it, you know, to be alive. Not just the walking, breathing dead, but in fact, the spark. That's miraculous, isn't it? If we're not supposed to dance, why all the music? If I'm not supposed to laugh, you know, why all the irony and the absurdity? I'm sorry, I'm going to laugh, even in the midst of my self-absorption. But if I work these steps, thanks, Lynn. If I work these steps, God changes my heart and my mind, and my actions will follow. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
And thank you, Larry K. from Chicago. For those of us who might have joined the meeting a little bit later, we are continuing our study in the big book in the chapter More About Alcoholism. We're on page 32, the second paragraph, a man of 30, but we're 13 lines down where it says, out came his carpet slippers and a bottle. So the line is now open for sharing on what we just read. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared Monday or Tuesday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once. It does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Diana.
Okay, let me just tell you, there were quite a few names. The only person I heard was Diane. Who else spoke, please?
Felicia Darian K.
Oh, goodness. Okay, I got Darian K. out of that. And who else?
Seema.
Sorry, didn't get anybody. Who else?
No.
Felicia D. from Rhode Island.
Okay. All right, one moment, please. I heard Christina J. and somebody. Who's from Rhode Island?
Felicia D.
Felicia. Okay, so far I have Diane, Darian K., Christina J., and Felicia D. Was there anybody else who I missed?
Seema P.
Seema P. Anyone else?
Toby K.
Great. Thank you very much, everybody. Let's see if we can fit everybody in. We have Diane, Darian K., Christina J., Felicia D., Seema P., and Toby K. Diane, please go ahead. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi, this is Diane M. I live on Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts. And I guess if there was ever a paragraph for me to jump in and, you know, get with the flow here of sharing at this meeting, it's this one. You know, when I think about the carpet and slippers, for me, the carpet and slippers represent my disconnecting, my letting go of my disciplines, my not making my calls, my cutting back on meetings, you know. That carpet and slipper, that's kind of my carpet and slipper. And then all of a sudden, it's like shocking when I end up in the food, and it's like I attempted to stop altogether and could not. Oh, my gosh, what a surprise. How did that happen? You know, I love this paragraph. I'm just so grateful to be abstinent. It's like I'm heading toward retirement. And, you know, one of my fears is just, you know, what's going to happen when, you know, that, you know, resting on my laurels, I'm going to end up back in that place. And so it's such a prediction. It's such a fact. And that I need to stay connected with other people and continue to work the program and stay on a spiritual path, that my self-discipline, which I've always used as the tool that, you know, helps me to lose weight, et cetera, and not asking for help from people and from my higher power. So I'm just so glad to share and to be part of this group. And thank you all. Diane M., Massachusetts.
Thank you, Diane M. Now we have Darian K., followed by Christina J. Hi, Darian.
Good morning, Lynn. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great, great. This is Darian K. from the other end of Massachusetts in the Berkshires. I am so grateful to be on the line with all of you today. And such good sharing, really, really good. You know, when I heard that share, I just love how Bill writes. And, you know, I am a comfort seeker, you know, and I've heard people talk about being a comfort-seeking missile, and that's me. Like, I go where comfort is. and to me, those fuzzy slippers and the fuzzy pajamas and the fleece, you know, jacket, blankets, they're just all so comfortable. And that's where I want to be all the time. And damn it, I live in this life that, you know, is uncomfortable, full of changes, full of unpredictable situations, full of joy and sorrows. And, you know, I know that before program, I picked up the food because of all those things. It was just a knee-jerk reaction to the way that life was uncomfortable for me. And you know, I believe in my heart that I have, you know, the relapse, God forbid, that I could experience is way lower than the compulsive overeating I did 30-odd years ago. I really do. I believe that there's a lot of yes, which I heard stands for you're eligible too. And I just have a healthy fear of those yes. And I don't want to go there because it is a death. It really is. And, you know, sadly to say, I saw that happen to my mom. You know, slowly this disease took her, whether it was the immobility piece first, and then the lack of energy and the power to just push through the pain when she had her knee surgery. It was the saddest thing. And so I am a mini her. And so I really believe in my heart of hearts that that could be my path. And so for today, thank you, God, I have this program in my life and that everything is not comfortable. And then I just have to turn to my higher power to put his arms around me and hold my hand, whatever it takes for me to walk through this life abstinently and peacefully and free from the, you know, the shackles of the disease. So I'm so, so grateful. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Darian K. And now we have Christina J., followed by Felicia D. Good morning, Christina.
Morning, Lynn. Morning, everyone. Christina J. in North Carolina here. This poor guy. It's obvious he didn't have program. And I can relate to him in that way. For years, I didn't have program. I remember standing in an Optifast line at Kaiser Hospital in California. My first time there, and everybody in the line was talking about don't ever take the first bite. Don't take a first bite of anything while you're on this fasting, 800 calorie a day shake program, and, you know, the having meetings where we're going to be looking at our past and why we eat and all this stuff. Well, you know, 3 months later, I was down where I needed to be physically, but I was a mess emotionally, and I didn't have program. And so came out the coffee, came out a bite. I took the first bite, and it's not that I wanted to, because they tell you in every diet program that I was ever in, when you get to your maintenance weight, you can have a cookie. You can add this to your that, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was scared to death of that because in all my experimentation over the years, I knew I couldn't have one cookie. Who wants one cookie? I don't understand that thinking at all. You know, but yet, because of my emotional discomfort over the years, I have all often gone for the one cookie and realizing it wasn't going to be enough. And actually, it has stopped me many times when there's only been one cookie, because I would have to get up and leave work and go buy a whole bunch of crap. Because one cookie is not enough. One bite is never enough. I don't even know what that mentality is. So today I have programs. I have this plan of action. And what has taken me back to relapse over and over? Not because I wanted to take the bite, not because I want to eat like other people, because I don't. I don't want to eat crap. I don't care if it's one bite or 100 bites. First of all, it won't work for me. Second of all, I don't want to eat that stuff. I want to eat healthy. So what has kept me going back to relapse? Because I wasn't working the emotional, spiritual aspect of this program. I could do 1 through 9. I could do 11 a little bit. I could do 12 big time because I love helping people. But I wasn't doing those 10s. And I said, because I've handled everything in my life myself, you know. I've handled everything. So I say, okay, well, this is not a big deal. I don't have to call anybody. Besides, who's going to want to hear all my crap, right? Who's going to want to hear the whole history? But that's not how the 10th step is done. You don't tell the whole history. You get right into the emotional discomfort. It's almost like a mini 4-step, as many of us know. So thank God for this program. I don't have to die anymore. Because my whole eating career, I was dying, slowly dying, as many have spoken about. And as you're out there and, you know, you're still flirting with the first bite because you want to eat, do you really want to eat like other people? So much bad food out there that you just want to shove. I can't eat like other people. This is the only way I've found. Vision, when I came into Vision in 2014, I'd been flirting with other OA.
Time, please.
Sticking my toe in, and I never could find the answer. And I found it here. So if you're out there, hang in there. Keep coming back. Love you all.
Thank you, Christina J. from North Carolina. Next, we have Felicia D., followed by Seema P. Good morning, Felicia.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service and for your deportment, because you make it really fun to be on this meeting with your tone and enthusiasm. So for me, I came into the parent program at age 19, and I saw where my life was going awry and that I needed to have total abstinence. And in the book where it talks about we're like men who've lost their legs, they don't grow new ones, the concept made sense to me. And I've been blessed to be abstinent from that substance for 35 years. So 2 years later, I came in to OA, and I was like, okay, I got this. I just need to be abstinent. And I spent so many decades thinking, well, if I just stay away from this, or if I just stay away from that, then I can be fine, and I'll be fine. And I didn't understand that I was worshiping like an idea of eating, and I was worshiping like weight, and I was trying to do seek ease and comfort, right? Like I wanted to lose weight not to be of service. I wanted to lose weight so that I could look good and feel comfortable and feel cute and be special and be okay. And I wanted to lose weight so that I, you know, could run around with my kids. Sometimes it could even be a good thing. But it was always about me. It wasn't about enlarging the spiritual condition. And even when I look at the third step, I said the third step was reading the third step last night with another fellow, and, you know, the victory over my difficulties so I may bear witness to others. Like, I always wanted the victory over the difficulties. Kind of, I think I probably was so self-centered, I was like glossing over that so that it would show other people the power of God in my life. And the carpet slippers, like, I always have hit, like, certain periods of time or certain periods in the steps where I'm like, okay, now I can pull out the slippers. Now I'm arrived, you know. Oh, it's the busy season of work, so now I need to do some of these disciplines a little bit less. Oh, I've actually finished the 12 steps. I don't have to work so hard. I'm not in hospitalization. Oh, I am sponsoring. So I'm, you know, this twisted thing, like I can somehow be like a two-stepper. And I need I need to do all of this stuff every day. Like, there is no graduating. Like, recovered, not cured, has a new meaning for me today. It hits differently today. Today, when I have anxiety, which lately I've had some, I've been able to see, okay, this means I need to look more at 10 and 11, and I need to take these into my calls instead of feeling like shame and like a failure. And I need to take this to God. And there's no certain amount, like,
time.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Felicia D. from Rhode Island. And now we have Seema P., followed by Toby K. Please go ahead, Seema.
Hey, Lynn. Thanks for your service. Hopefully I can be heard. This is Seema P. from Rhode Island as well. Grateful to be here. Always wonderful to share on this line. So, I came into program years ago. I had 19 years of physical recovery, 70-pound weight loss. I said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it this time. And I did it. And there's a lot of eyes there. But something happened. And within a short period of time, I was up 100 pounds. So, you know, the food is just cunning, baffling, and powerful. I can't tell you what it was that got me started. But something that happened was the failure to enlarge my spiritual program of recovery. And then I got abstinent again and lost the 100 pounds and did it over again. I picked up again and talk about puzzled and humiliated. Little Miss OA, you know, for 19 years and then got it back again and then lost it again. You know, it was this vicious cycle that I was stuck in. And, you know, the doctor's opinion talks about these men that were working on a business deal a day or so prior to the date they picked up. You know, that phenomenon of craving became so paramount to all other interests. And they weren't drinking to escape, but they were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. You know, they were sober. They were sober. I was abstinent. Life was good in abstinence. But what made me pick up that first bite? I can't tell you, other than I didn't have that spiritual program of recovery. And, you know, the previous reading that we had yesterday, you know, says that, you know, we fell victim to the belief that, you know, my long period of recovery entitled me to eat like a normal eater. And my disease tells me that I don't have a disease. And do I have food thoughts today? Yes, of course I do. I'm a normal compulsive overeater. But today I know that I have this thing, and I am convinced of that. That was a very big step for me. After many, many years in this program, I had to fully concede to my innermost self, and that delusion had to be smashed that I can eat like a normal eater. I need to work with others, and I need to listen to all of you on this meeting because you all help keep me abstinent as well and in the state of recovery. I'm very grateful today, and I wish you all a great day. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Seema P. from Rhode Island, and Toby K., you'll be our last share this morning. Please go ahead, Toby.
Hi, it's Toby K. from Long Island, New York. The shares have been really great this morning, and I appreciate everybody's service and their honesty. So my husband is on a vacation, a golf vacation in Scotland, with some of the men in my family, and I said, you know, I want to go, and he said, nah, don't come. And then my daughter said she wants to go, and she's going. And I said, oh, you know, I'll go when you go. And she said, nah, don't come. And I'm saying to myself, why don't they want me? Am I a killjoy? Do they have problems with my food? Sometimes they do have issues with that. And I felt totally rejected, really horribly rejected. I felt like a victim. I was into self-pity. Poor me, poor me. I said, well, you know, I'll go to my daughter's pool and I'll just drown. I can't believe I said that. I'm not a kid. Supposedly a mature adult. But I remembered from years ago that I heard Liz Bailey talk at one of our old meetings, and she said, pour me a drink. And I said, oh my gosh, that's what I want to do. I'm God's child. Why do I want to hurt myself? And I also heard on one of the meetings, the glass is half full. And I started to put in all the things that are full in my life, my children, my grandchildren, one great-grandchild. I said, how could you sink to this lowest position? And I see I was resting on my laurels. I wasn't working on my steps, certainly not on my step 10. I wasn't connecting enough. And I was just in my own self-pity, in my own powerless pit. So I really appreciate this program. God gave me thoughts from left field, and I can't do it on my own. And when I shared last night on a chat,
time
someone said, thank you. Somebody sent crowns. I said, oh my gosh, I have the crown of God on me. How could I think so low? I'm a princess. Thank you for letting me share, I pass.
Thank you to everyone who shared, and thank you to Team Wednesday. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. And the share ID for today, Wednesday, July 17th, the 7 a.m. meeting, is 21581. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Heidi B. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Yes, hi, Heidi B., recovered in New York for today. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.